This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Bob Mould is a hero to many rock bands and rock listeners. He's one of the most influential musicians in alternative rock. With his first band, Husker Du, he created a loud, fast, and furious guitar sound. It set the stage for what later became known as grunge rock. Mould is also a songwriter and singer. His career has progressed through several distinct stages. He co-founded Husker Du when he was 17. The band broke up 9 years later in 1988. After that, he retreated to a cabin in the Minnesota woods, writing more reflective songs and launching a solo career. His guitar playing, singing, and songwriting are now showcased with his band Sugar. The band has a new CD scheduled for release next month on Rykodisc. Our interview was recorded last year after the release of a Sugar CD ironically titled File Under Easy Listening. We opened with a track from it. Bob Mould, welcome to Fresh Air.
Hello, Terry.
Let me start with what I'm sure will strike you and also many of our listeners. It's a really stupid question, but I'll ask it anyways. Why would a singer and songwriter like you want to bury their voice so far behind the guitar in the mix?
Well, I mean, sometimes when I'm at home constructing a song, and, you know, especially I think with the more distorted guitar type songs, oftentimes I hear the voice as just something that complements the instrumental track. I don't hear it as a featured instrument per se. With a song like Gift that we just heard, where there's a lot of conflict involved, where everything seems to be fighting for a common space or for to stand out in front for a brief moment. I mean, that's really just the way I hear things in my head. It's not an intentional sabotage of the vocals or anything.
Was it ever challenging for you to find a way to combine songwriting with that kind of, you know, wall of guitar sound that you have?
Well, I think a lot of the songwriting process, you know, made itself apparent through the wall of guitar. When, you know, in a studio setting where I'm layering a lot of different electric guitars, you tend to pick up different order harmonics, you know, second and third order harmonics that suggest, you know, different high voices that you may not think about, and sometimes that affects your melodic sensibility towards a song. Lyrically, that's a separate thing. But that's one way that things get constructed, is, you know, sort of by accident.
What's the feeling on stage of playing that kind of power guitar physically?
It makes your back hurt really bad.
Your back hurt?
Just the sheer amount of air that's being moved up there. I mean, at my microphone position, the guitar is usually about 125 decibels, and it's a lot to compete with. I mean, physically, it shakes your body really hard up there, and it's almost like you're fighting against that. Like you're fighting to keep your equilibrium, and it's an interesting experience up there sometimes.
Does that physical feeling feel different to you now at the age of 33 than it felt when you were a teenager?
Absolutely. it's not quite as pleasant a feeling anymore. But it has taken its toll a little bit. I mean, I've been out there for about 15 years doing this, and it's uh, I mean, it's a lot. It gets to be a lot more work every time out. You know, I'm really starting to you know, just think of other ways beyond, you know, beyond sugar and beyond the very loud electric presentation, you know, to bring music to people.
Well, why don't I play something pretty acoustic from, this is actually from a Husker Du album, Too Far Down.
Okay.
You want to say something about the song and the performance?
Maybe the darkest song I think I've ever written. that should sum it up pretty quickly. It's a dark one.
About terrible depression?
Yeah, I guess the everyday depression.
Was it that bad?
some months it is, yeah. But no, it's a pretty striking song to me. It's one of my favorites.
Okay, well, this is Too Far Down. When you've played songs like Too Far Down that, you know, don't have that power guitar sound, do your audiences ever resist it? You've said that audiences usually want it louder, faster.
Mm-hmm. Anytime I pull out Too Far Down, it can usually silence the entire room. So it has as strong an impact as just a completely different one.
Good.
As opposed to the physical brute force.
What impact does it have on you to know that a lot of people in the audience want you to play louder, faster?
I have to follow my instinct. I mean, hopefully they will appreciate whatever context I present the music in. You know, I mean, when I'm up there, whether it's with Sugar or by myself, I mean, I'm in my own world. I can feel energy coming back. I can, you know, and, you know, there's some interaction that's very unspoken and uncliched that happens between the audience and performer. But I mean, you have to follow your instincts up there. I mean, it's not about pleasing the crowd because of what they want, but pleasing the crowd because you're happy with your own performance and they can sense that.
My guest is guitarist, singer, and songwriter Bob Mould. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Bob Mould, formerly of the band Husker Du, now leader of the band Sugar. Were you in bands before Husker Du?
I was in a band in the fourth grade. I used to have a little pretend studio at home, but it really wasn't a pretend studio. It was like a reel-to-reel machine that I would record, you know, a lot of songs on. And, you know, damned if those things are gone forever, but It was really really ironic when I got back into making records with Husker Du that my mom had sent out this little recording studio sign that I'd made with one of those dino guns that I had up on my bedroom door. So sort of everything has come full circle. It's very weird.
Would you tell us a story of how Husker Du formed?
I moved out to St. Paul, Minnesota in fall of 78 to go to school at McAllister College. And
this was your big break from the hometown.
Yeah, getting out of there. I was 17 and had been accepted to school actually my sophomore year. I kept taking my SATs all through high school just as, you know, early as I can remember, just trying to get out. And got accepted early on some kind of underprivileged program, I guess. My parents didn't have a whole lot of money and still don't, but... So once I got out there, it was like, okay, now there's a big world in front of me and I can do some things. And just met up with Grant Hart and Greg Norton, the other two people that were in Husker Du. You know, they both worked at record stores. We all had, you know, mutual tastes in music and thought it would be wise to put a band together. Just very simple, usually the way most bands get together, I suppose, at the record store.
No, what did you think of Husker Du as doing that was different from what other bands were doing at the time?
We hated most everything that was going on in Minneapolis, Minnesota, or St. Paul, which was our home base at the time. I think not unlike a lot of non-media center cities in America in the late 70s, you would probably get to a period like 1980 and they'd just be finding out about punk rock, and you'd have bands, you know, playing on New Wave Monday or something, you know, and wearing ripped up shirts and safety pins and doing Sex Pistols covers, and then the same band would probably show up on Friday at a suburban bowling alley doing Ted Nugent covers. And I think we just hated all that, and we really, you know, sort of set out to destroy that by playing as fast as we could, as loud as we could, being as aggressive as we could, as belligerent as we could be. And it certainly made people sit up and take notice.
What were the typical highs and lows in the early days of the band for you?
If we got paid for a show, that was a real high point. A low point would be if the cops showed up, I guess, in real simple terms. I mean, in the developmental stage, if I think any kind of project or statement like that, it's really hard to say, oh, what an amazing show, or oh, what a lousy show. I think you're just running on fumes, you know. And, you know, the good things are getting paid, the bad things are getting busted.
What would you get busted for?
Setting up in a public space and playing.
Outside?
Outside, or like in the basement of a dormitory or something, and then having like the campus police, you know, come and kill the power, or things. You know, I remember Husker Du putting on a little impromptu show in the laundry room of a dormitory I was living in, and it happened to be connected to the basement of another dorm where there was some kind of disco party, and essentially a full scale, you know, like 100-person fist fight broke out. And that was sort of an unnerving night. The only good thing was that was the night that I met Dave Perner and Danny Murphy from Soul Asylum.
Mm-hmm.
As they were going to Marshall University High School, I think, at the time, in Minneapolis.
I know there was a period during the 80s when you were doing speed. And I'm wondering if that helped with your music. I mean, if that put you more physically on the level that your music was.
I'm sure it had an effect on the music. I would guess, you know, very early on, maybe the first two or three records, it had a very pronounced effect. You sort of have to phase yourself down out of those kinds of things. That's something you can do when you're young, if you choose to. But you can't sustain that kind of abuse on your body on, you know, whether it's alcohol or, you know, any powdered drug or whatever. It's great when you're young. I think the music, at least for me, the compositional aspect of it changed when I got all that stuff. I think especially when I got alcohol out of my life in 86, you tend to really start to see the dark side of your work at that point. Because, you know, drugs and alcohol ultimately, you know, they're feel-good things. You know, they're not inspirational devices. They never were to me. It was a feel-good thing. And once you take that good feeling away and you have to look in the mirror at yourself clearly, then you really start to see what's been going on. And that's when you start to pick up all the debris, all the years and years of things that start to come back to you when you least expect it.
Well, I guess looking at the bright side, at least you were able to put that in your music.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot to contend with, and it took me a few years to figure out that that's what was happening. I think when I figured it out was probably in the middle of 88 during the writing for the workbook record,
mm-hmm.
the first solo record. I mean, a lot of things started coming at me that I had never had to think about before.
Like what?
Just, you know, the prospect of having to be an adult, the prospect of, you know, bridges you've burned, relationships that you've damaged, just, you know, the peril of youth.
What was 88 a turning point that made you realize you had to become an adult?
Well, it was after a couple of years of being completely sober. It was after the breakup of Husker Du. It was after, you know, suicides and other drug things running out of control around me, and, you know, watching 9 years of your life disintegrate and having to start over. I mean, that's, I think that just that is a, you know, as a fixed price menu, as a big plate to deal with in front of you.
Was it alarming when Husker Du broke up? I mean, alarming in the sense that you maybe couldn't see ahead what was coming next?
Yes and no. Frightening to not have the safety net, but so exciting to fall a couple times on your own.
Bob Mould recorded last year. His band Sugar has a new CD that will be released next month on Ryko Disc. More interviews from our archives next week at this time. This is Fresh Air.